141 951 1025. It's time to talk football. It's Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Good evening and welcome to Clyde One Super Scoreboard as we look back on yet another incredible weekend across the Scottish Premiership and in that title race in particular. The ultimate game of two halves at Ibrox yesterday, ending in a share of the spoils, meaning Celtic can go second if they win their game in hand on Wednesday. Surely though, the big winners were Hearts, now 6 points clear at the top after beating Aberdeen at home on Saturday. And what about Motherwell? Winning again, keeping another clean sheet again, how much are they in the conversation? I'm Gordon Duncan, and joining me tonight you have Motherwell's Andy Hall and Roger Hanna.
Well, I'm a bit anxious tonight, Gordon, I have to say. You know all the mayhem and chaos we've seen in this studio in the last couple of years. Remember the night Scott Allen was in that swivel chair and broke the telly? The night Gordon Dale was rolling about the floor in that inflatable chicken suit? Everybody remembers the night Hugh Keevan phoned in here after the overdosing in the Benel and the night Scotland won at Belgrade. Well, I'm a bit worried, because after the antics of Callum Slattery last week and Tamanda Waswanisi at the weekend, I'm worried you two will just throw yourself off your chairs and start rolling about in the ground.
What are you trying to say?
I'm saying the last two weekends, after the antics of your teammates.
What, you think I'll die? Is that what you're saying?
Didn't Richard King get his red card rescinded?
Well, what about Waswanisi for the penalty?
I think he is. When are the BAFTAs?
Somebody's
are they passed?
Do you know what it is?
Are they passed?
I'll flick him in the unmentionables and see what he does.
Exactly. Do you know what it is, though? It's quite obvious. It's embarrassing that he thinks we can't see through it. He's too scared, too pathetic to give a league prediction, so he's
exactly
trying to deflect against the champions.
Well, I'll tell you, somebody did give a league, a league prediction. Me and Mr. Keevans, and we gave it all the way back in October.
He's tipped everybody.
He's tipped all three.
Well, I've not changed. We're now sitting in the 2nd of March, and for the second week running, Hearts are the winners again. And it was a fantastic occasion yesterday, a great game. There's going to be loads of talking points through it, but I tell you what, every household up and down the country must have been going bananas.
Well, the good thing is, Roger, I've put the gauntlet down to you. You have the chance to prove us wrong. Tell us now who you think will win the league, and if you don't, we'll know that you're a coward, and we'll know that you were deflecting by trying to throw mud at the mighty Steelmen. Come on, now's your chance. The nation is waiting.
There's no point in me giving a title prediction. Look at the second 45 minutes at Ibrox yesterday. We can't predict what's going to happen in 3/4 of an hour. Never mind what's going to happen in the next 9 or 10 games. What I will say is, I think the fixtures are brilliant because Celtic in 3rd and Motherwell in 4th both play twice before the leaders Hearts and the second place Rangers play again. You think it's tight just now? Just see how tight it's going to be after those games before Hearts go to Kilmarnock a week on Saturday night.
We said it before the weekend, Andy, as well, because we knew the scheduling. So again, it couldn't disappoint. There was no way that it wasn't going to be a big weekend, because Hearts play first and then something had to give between Glasgow's big two. And then that game yesterday, how do you even begin to analyse how Rangers went from one extreme to the other and how Celtic went from the other extreme to the other? It's just remarkable.
But I feel it almost just epitomises not only the season but both sides. I mean, so much to like at certain times, but also so much to dislike as well. And I thought, for as good as Rangers were in the first half, I thought they were equally as poor in the second. And likewise, I thought Celtic were horrendous in the first half but very good in the second half as well. And I tell you who weren't: the mighty Jambos on the Saturday.
0141 951 1025, that is the number you need. So what are the latest thoughts after the weekend on the title race? Arithmetically, it certainly was one that boosted Hearts' chances, even if Roger Hanna won't admit it. But what do you think? Where does that leave everybody? Is it Hearts now? What does it do for how do you even begin to assess what yesterday meant for Glasgow's big two? Because in the end, clearly it felt like a better result for Celtic. It kind of feels like a win, if you like, and wouldn't have felt like that for you Rangers fans. But maybe in the cold light of day, you take the positives from the first half. Celtic fans, what was key to the comeback? Has Rio Hatate gone from calls for him to be kicked out of the club to potentially being Celtic's key player in the title run? And that's how knee-jerk we all are. What about that Chermiti goal? Where does that rank in the best you've seen in that derby fixture? And there is so much to get through from that game and all the others, and where it leaves us in the title race. So please pick up the phone on 0141 951 1025. These two will whet your appetite with some Monday night awards. Result of the weekend, please.
I'm going to go for Hearts. No, it's the second week running where people think that Hearts are going to falter. They get the job done. It's the third straight 1-0 victory at Tynecastle. And I think on reflection of the performance as well, I thought they were worthy of more than that 1-0 win. And they put all the pressure back onto Rangers and Celtic on the Sunday. And we don't know at this moment in time how important that goal can be by Rio Hatate at the end. If it stops Rangers win the league, if it helps Celtic win the league. But one thing's for sure, it helped Hearts win that weekend.
I need to go for Falkirk. I was there for Super Scoreboard on Saturday, 5-1 against Kilmarnock. When you consider they had a disallowed goal, very narrow offside, and they hit the woodwork twice in the second half, it really could have been anything. And they are, I'll give you a prediction, they're in the top six.
I'll keep my prediction on this to myself, but I am absolutely certain I can identify your two choices for goal of the weekend. There has to be only two choices.
Sure, I can identify Andy's.
Go on, surprise me.
Well, unfortunately, I wasn't at Hampden the day Scott McTominay scored that overhead kick against Denmark, but I was at the game yesterday, and it's one of the best goals I've seen live, and especially given the circumstances, the fixture, obviously what the fixture meant in terms of the title race. And it's just incredible athleticism, the power he gets on it, the contact he gets on the ball to get it by Sinisalo. It was an unbelievable goal, and like I said, I was speechless. I'd never seen it coming.
Your manager there as well, Andy?
He was indeed, yeah.
I'll tell you something, he's done some analysis of Celtic ahead of this game next Saturday.
he's seen a few.
Yeah, I tell you, he's seen an awful lot.
Two Motherwell digs by 9 minutes past six is a really interesting start for you, Roger Hannah. Would you want to maybe focus on the job in hand and give us your goal of the weekend? Or
Cam Congreve,
oh good,
of Dundee, has been terrific. And by the way, what a team Swansea City are going to have next season, because Philip Lissa has come up here and torn it up with Falkirk, and Cam Congreve has come up here and torn it up with Dundee. And you know, a phrase you very seldom hear on this show, I felt sorry for Dave Galloway on Saturday, because he's just recovered from what he thinks is a Hibs winner at 3-2. Jamie McGrath scoring when Cam Congreve goes up the other end for 3-3. Great goal.
Such a great technique that as well, wasn't it, Andy?
Unbelievable. It's so unorthodox as well, you know. Quite often we see this bouncing ball, players will try and get their laces and strike through it as hard as they possibly can. So it's seemed a bit weird the way he just had it with his instep, whipped it into that far corner. But nah, I agree with Roger. I think he's been a revelation this season. He's someone that you really enjoy watching as well. So direct, so positive on the ball. And he's been a difference maker for Dundee this year.
On the other hand, I don't know if you've got loads, so let's see what you've come up with for Howler of the weekend.
I'm going to go Aberdeen in general. So many times I've watched Aberdeen this season, and just I think they flattered to deceive. Again, I thought they were really, really poor at the weekend. Not scored a goal away from home in 2026 and didn't lay a glove on Hearts at any point.
I'm going to stick in Falkirk. Poor Ethan Shield-Brown, 39 seconds. Quickest own goal of the Premiership season. Calvin Miller, who was fantastic. And another man at Ibrox watching Celtic yesterday. Down the left all day long, great ball in. And to be fair to Ethan, if he doesn't attempt to clear it, it's getting knocked into the goal anyway. But
has to be really one of the quickest own goals ever.
Yeah,
no?
Yeah.
Did you say
39 seconds?
My goodness. And let's finish on a positive then. Who was your top man of the weekend?
I had to fit Motherwell in somewhere.
I was wondering, it's been lacking.
Tawanda Maswanisi, that's 21 goals this season for the newfound striker, and I thought he was terrific again at the weekend. He obviously wins the penalty with that dirty challenge for Seves, and then he scores his penalty kick, and then when you're flying high,
everything goes your way.
Sometimes everything just goes your way, as you say, and he gets that little deflection, gets his brace, and he's now sitting top goal scorer in the league with 16 goals.
Your top man, Roger Hannah?
I was kind of caught between two Falkirk players. Barnes Stewart was brilliant, but we'll give it to Dylan Tate. Mm-hmm. Two goals from the middle of the park. He's playing really, really well. Spoke well after the game. And he's been one of the long-term success stories for John McGlynn.
Right, let's go. 01419511025. Let's see where this takes us. William is going to kick things off. What about yesterday, William?
Hi, guys. How are you doing tonight?
Good, thank you.
Good stuff. So yesterday it really was. I mean, the first half was probably genuinely the best I've seen Rangers play in an Old Firm game, probably in the best part of the last 15, 20 years. I'm 30 this year, and I went to my first game when I was 7 years old, and genuinely, like, yesterday was the best 45 minutes I've ever seen us play against Celtic. To go from that to how we were in the second half was so disappointing, so deflating. Probably think it is Hearts' title to lose now. I think in the last month or so, with the amount of draws we've had as well, we've blown it. And yeah, I just think it sums up a lot of players in that squad who have been there for a couple of near title challenges that they've missed out on. I just don't think they're strong enough mentally to get over the line. And I think it comes from the manager as well, part of it, by saying, well, look at where we were a few months ago. Quite frankly, if I was speaking to Danny Rowe, I don't really care where we were a few months ago. The fact is, you got us into a title race, and it just seems like a ready-made excuse for when it inevitably goes wrong.
So you think a mentality issue?
100%, yes.
Andy, you're getting a bit of a reputation for being semi-decent at analysing football matches, so why, just from the Rangers lens, because William's a Rangers fan, how good was the first half? How bad was the second? And why was there a difference? And you've only got a couple of minutes to answer.
Well, I thought the first half, I thought Rangers were, I thought they were incredible. And to be honest, I just thought they bullied Celtic in the first half. I thought they were really physical. They were really direct. But being direct, I thought they set up to be so. I thought they had loads of bodies around the ball. They were landing on second balls. And when they landed on the second balls, I thought they played some good stuff in Celtic's half. Loads of quick combination, loads of bodies in the box. And I thought they put Celtic under a barrage for 45 minutes. That energy out of possession as well, I thought was excellent. I thought they forced Celtic into long balls when Celtic weren't set up to play that way. And then I thought they started the second half well enough as well for 7 or 8 minutes. And then naturally, like happens in most games of football, Celtic then have a period, 10 minutes or so, where I thought they come into the game. They get their goal. And I think at that point, you did feel as if Rangers had to change something, which they did. They brought in Mohamed Diamande. But when you then change your shape and you bring on an extra midfielder, you can't be as direct as you were for the opening 60 minutes, because you don't have the same amount of focal points at the top end of the pitch, and you don't have the same amount of bodies up front to land on the second balls. So it's then Celtic that win first contact, it's then Celtic that land on the second balls. And from then on in, Celtic were able to play their game. They started to build through the thirds. And to be honest, I thought in the end, I thought Celtic merited the equaliser.
Roger, debates about mentality are great, because there's no right or wrong answer. William can have his theory. You can't really measure it. It's very difficult to prove one way or the other. Where do you find yourself when William thinks it, you know, it's a mentality issue at Rangers?
This claim irks Danny Rule. It's irked on time and again, every time it's laid at his door. But when John Souter can come out after a game and say the fans have every right to ask the question, then you know it is a live, genuine, legitimate debate. And Danny Rule will only be able to close down the debate that William's talking about when he delivers a trophy, because until such times as that Rangers team under Danny Rule wins something, there will always be question marks. Because
you can lose trophies or lose matches for different reasons, can't you? I mean, two of these teams we're talking about, maybe three, aren't going to win the title. Does that mean all the ones who don't win it have the wrong mentality?
No, but if you look at the teams, and you're saying I'm having a pop at Motherwell, I'm only teasing you to, if we're saying Motherwell are genuine title contenders, Rangers had a lead at Fir Park, should have closed it out against 10 men and blew it. Yesterday against Celtic, genuine title contenders, they were 2-0 up and coasting, and at the first sign of trouble, they folded. So I think William and the Rangers fans are right to ask that question. What if Rangers only won 3 of the last 8? I mean, John Souter's saying they might need to win 9 in a row to win the league title. If you're only winning 3 and 8, it's difficult to think you're going to win 9 and 9.
Where does this leave your thoughts on the title race, William, and Rangers' chances, or how it compares to everyone else?
Well, Celtic have too much to do now. I think Roger touched on it as well, what John Souter was saying yesterday. Like, you're probably going to need probably the minimum 8 out of the last 9 to win, and then the one that you don't, probably you would need a draw. So I think we need to go pretty much unbeaten for the rest of the season and win at the very bare minimum 8 of the last 9. I just don't think we've got the bottle, the mentality, the quality to do it. I just think we've left ourselves with too much to do. We got ourselves back into a challenge within 2 points. I just think we've dropped too many points over the last month, you know, the away games last month and then yesterday to throw away a 2-goal lead. I just think we've left ourselves with too much to do, and we've still got to play Motherwell again, still got to go to Tyne Castle and Celtic Park. I think I'm pretty much accepting defeat on it, unfortunately.
When you look at the last couple of weeks, last couple of match days, Andy, remember the Monday night you guys were here and Hearts had gone to Ibrox and lost 4-2, and everyone, we all speculated about how big, you know, how that moment could be. In the last 2 match days since then, Hearts have taken 6 points, Rangers have taken 2, and Celtic have taken 1. So I don't mind us, at the moment we're on the phone, we're looking through the Glasgow lens, which is fine, but the Hearts' position is just getting stronger and stronger.
Yeah, it is. And if Rangers' perspective, you even go further than that, it was obviously three consecutive draws in a row away from home, Hibs, Motherwell, and then Livingston, and then they follow that up with just a point at Celtic yesterday. I know I have tipped Hearts for a long period of time, but it's due to, I think they've been the most consistent side. I don't really see many weaknesses within them. I honestly think at this moment in time, I can't see anything other than Hearts winning this title.
What did yesterday do specifically for those two then? Like, you know, Williamson, it's now too much to do for Rangers.
I think Celtic's equalised in the last minute stopped Rangers for winning the title. I don't think it did anything for Celtic. I think, like I said, I think a draw for both teams before the game, I think it done nothing for either of them. I don't see Hearts. Hearts have 9 games remaining. I think if Hearts win 5 of them, it's enough, because I still think Rangers and Celtic are going to drop points to other sides.
That's the one thing. They will all drop points, because there's not an enormous difference between any of the teams. Could you see, you know, and I'll throw in Hibs and Falkirk in that as well, could you see with any certainty that, say, Hearts go and win an Edinburgh derby at Easter Road? Lost there the last time. Would you see with any certainty Rangers would go and win at Falkirk after the break? Having seen Falkirk at the weekend, you wouldn't put a lot of money in that, and they didn't earlier in the season when Russell Martin gets slacked. And look what happened the last time Celtic played Motherwell. So there will be points dropped by everyone. The last two weekends have fallen perfectly for Hearts. If Derek McInnes had scripted the whole thing, this is what he would have scripted. And if Hearts do win the league, I think they'll look back to these two weekends as the real key, the real pivotal moment.
Thank you to William. What about Barry on the other line? As a Celtic fan, Barry, where does it leave you?
I'm obviously happy that we got a point, you know, especially the second half, at least we decided to turn up. But I think that this is happening too much. Celtic, you can't keep, Martin O'Neill said it himself, you can't keep turning up, waiting to go 2 goals down, then decide, right, we want to play now. If your aspirations are winning the title, you've got to be at it from the get-go. And so much yesterday, I unfortunately missed the game due to work, but Callum McGregor, to me, constantly pointing backwards when a player's in the opposing third, and we're so slow to build to make anything happen. We have to be better at this. And I'm actually quite angry at the Celtic board. And Peter, guys like Dermot Desmond, calls himself a friend of Martin O'Neill. Friends don't do that to you with that January transfer window, with this guy Mvuka that has got a heart condition, when you could have went out and got Manzunisi, but you refused to spend any money. So to me, Martin O'Neill is doing his best. He's taking on the league with one hand tied behind his back, and it really bugs me that we didn't properly strengthen in January.
So it sounds more like that first half's actually sticking with you rather than taking positives from the second and seeing that as a sign of positivity going forward. So you don't think you're not boosted at all by yesterday. You don't think yesterday shows Celtic can win the league?
It's, be honest, no, because I don't see a mentality shift. I need to see Celtic from the start wanting to win games. I see Celtic being very lazy at the start of games, being very passive, no one to take risks. This is what Celtic's all about. You, enterprising football, you have to take risks. You're never going to get it 100% right all the time. And I just feel like this is the way a Brendan Rodgers team was. It was pass side to side, wait till another team makes a mistake, then punish them. And it's so hard to watch. And I think a lot of teams have figured out how best to play against Celtic, and it makes us very, very predictable.
What are you thinking then?
Martin O'Neill, correctly, is getting a lot of praise last night and today, Gordon, for the changes he made at half time, you know, sending on Rio Hatate and Sebastian Tenekte and moving Maeda through the middle, etc., etc. And it's noticeable, he has been quite quick to go to his bench. You know, it's not the first time he's made a couple of substitutions at half time, and that would indicate A, he's either got the team wrong to begin with, or B, the guys he's put trust in haven't done it. And I think Barry's probably right. I think Martin O'Neill will have looked at a lot of Celtic first half performances and thought, nah, I'm not having this, I'm afraid. And, you know, again, Celtic took great praise for that run when they were scoring those last minute goals, you know, when they took Dundee into extra time and beat them, when they got the win against Livingston, when Oxlade-Chamberlain scored, they got the win against Kilmarnock right at the end as well, when Arroyo scored. But they probably needed those goals because they had started the game so badly. As Barry says, you know, two down at Kilmarnock, they were behind at Hibs and never really got back on top of the game when they played Hibs. So a lot of what Barry says is correct. Celtic were great in the second half. Hatate was terrific. Tonekty, I thought, played well too. They just looked a far better outfit. But a bit like when we said last week, they can't expect to keep scoring last-minute winners. Celtic can't expect to keep starting games like that and, you know, flourishing.
There was honestly so many things that I took away from Celtic at the weekend. I think even by his own admission, I think Martin Neil would agree that he got his starting lineup wrong. I thought Celtic were so static in possession, no rotations, no one tried to get on the ball. And Rangers press, which was very, very good, forced Celtic long from then on in, as we spoke about before. Rangers then won first contact, second contact. But as much as I thought Hatate and Tonekty changed the game at halftime, what they absolutely did, I actually thought Daiza Maeda going through the middle changed the game for Celtic as well, because Junior Adamu in the first half, I can completely understand that he got no service in 45 minutes, but if you're not getting any service, you need to try and affect the football game one way or another, whether it's going pressing people and try to harry and force people into errors. Maeda's energy alone, chasing down back passes to Jack Butland. How many times did Jack Butland sclaff a long ball at the pitch in the second half? It came from Daiza Maeda's pressure, and Daiza Maeda's energy at the top end of the pitch, I think the rest of the team followed. And that's why for me, I thought Celtic looked as if they played with a lot more energy in the second half.
It was a good second half, but Barry's not that impressed. So keep your calls coming and we'll speak to you next.
Taking your calls on Scottish football, 0141 951 1025. This is Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Roger Hannah and Andy Halliday are here. It's your weekend debrief and quite a lot to go through. Increased calls for these Monday shows need extended. Seriously,
I take it.
It is.
Enjoy your company.
Get some dinner in here and just crack on with it. James,
Bill producer John, my agent, will be in touch.
James is a Rangers fan in Govan. What did you take away from yesterday, James?
I thought Rangers were really good yesterday, and I'm really, really so disappointed in so many of the Rangers fans. I mean, I'm the biggest moaner out, but Rangers fans conceding, honest to God. If the Rangers players have got that attitude, then we'd be as well just packing up. Rangers fans should know better than anyone what it's like to get a championship over the line. We've won four championships in the last Sundays, four helicopter Sundays. You know what I mean? It goes right to the wire, and teams will drop points. But I've got 2 points, right? The first two, one about Fernandez, in the second, but the penalty. Mm-hmm. Right, so the first point about Fernandez, I thought it was a bomb scare yesterday. I actually thought, if you think of your full-backs, they were brilliant. To be honest with you, the full game, I actually thought Celtic definitely improved the second half. We sort of tired, but I can't honestly, I've watched it twice, and there's no players that actually were really, really bad. They just tired. And probably Celtic made the best substitutions, and Rangers made probably the poorer substitution. But Fernandez was not picking up his man. They're dropping off him. He's got no flexibility as a centre-half. He's a bomb scare. He ball watches all the time. He's a statue when the ball's played in the box. See, if they target him next week, we are in big trouble. He's got to improve, because he's the main man. If you watch the Celtic ball getting chipped into the box, crossed into the box, he's just like a statue. I'm not a Souter fan, but he can't be criticised yesterday. He was pretty good. He was probably a lot better than he's been. But if you watch Fernandes, if you watch the game, you watch his performance, he's casual. When he's got the ball, he's got at least... it's as if he's got the ball and he's got plenty of time. A man's on him, and it's going to lead us to a lot of bother, because he's far too casual on the ball. What do you think of that, guys?
Andy, is Fernandez culpable?
I think he is at times. I think he's got so much. I think he's got so much potential. I think he's got so many attributes. I think it's not defensive qualities. I just think it's a lack of defensive instincts at times, a lack of concentration. I didn't notice as much as James was talking to him yesterday in terms of being on the ball. And you mentioned that John Souter can't get criticised. I think John Souter was really poor for the second goal. He's the one that follows the runner, Daiza Maeda, and he follows it really well to the near post. But then it's just a double movement for Maeda to get himself free in the middle of the six-yard box. And then it's desperate defending for Dujon Sterling, who I thought was absolutely excellent yesterday, to try and throw himself in front of dies Maeda's header that eventually gives the penalty away. And I think there has been occasions over the last couple of months or so where Emmanuel Fernandez has had lapses of concentration, but I must admit, in terms of the game yesterday, I didn't really see him as a major issue.
That is Manny Fernandez for you. He's a young centre-back. Rangers took a punt on him when they got him from Peterborough at the start of the season. Rangers would probably make a profit because I would imagine Danny Rule would smooth some of the rough edges that you're talking about, James. But if it was the finished article, the size of him, the pace of him, the age of him, he wouldn't be at Rangers. And this is where Celtic and Rangers are now. This is where they need to get players. Look at the Celtic central defence. You know, they're signing a young lad on loan from Brentford, Benjamin Arthur, and they're playing Dane Murray at 22, who is just as unpolished and rough as Manny Fernandez. But Celtic will be hoping that they can polish the rough edges of him. But I didn't think Fernandez was any worse than anyone else yesterday. I know the points you mean. He is extremely casual, and they'll have to get that out of his game. But he's vastly improved from the centre half, who couldn't get anywhere near the team for the first 3 months of the season.
I'm keen to get your thoughts on the penalty, James. Talk to me just a bit more, if you don't mind, about your title. I don't know if confidence is the right word, because you're a bit more confident certainly than the previous caller. What are you thinking about Rangers' title chances?
I don't think we're out yet. Celtic are not out of it. Rangers are. I mean, if Celtic win tomorrow, they're 1 point effectively ahead. Mm-hmm. So nobody's out of it. Motherwell's not out of it. So if Motherwell's not out of it, Rangers aren't out of it. You know, there's a lot of games to be played, and it's squeaky bum time when it starts going into the last five games. You know, I mean, teams fold. I mean, I would say the most confident, obviously Motherwell obviously get to be confident because of the way they're playing. Aye, but Celtic are probably the usual confident. There's never any lacking in confidence when it comes to Celtic. They've won it enough. But Rangers fans, they need to get a grip, man. Honestly, they need to get a grip. We've got to. I mean, as I say, I've moaned, I complained, I'll complain about Danny Rowe, but we can't do anything about it now. It's all about trying to win the league. We can't do a U-turn. We've got to win the cup tie. We've got to win the games. But listen, on the penalty point, all right, aye, I want to ask a question. The Oracles. How many, before you ask me your question, I'm going to ask the two oracles. Many penalties do you think Rangers have had at Celtic Park in the last 35 years? Go for it, Andy, and see what you think. And I know the two of you guys are pretty good with things like that. But how many penalties do you think we've had 35 long years?
I don't know, and I think I can guess the answer.
I'm going to take a guess of five.
What do you think?
I'll say three.
Yes, you're spot on, three. Three in 35 years. Now, you asked me if it was a penalty yesterday. All I'm going to say is, we never get that at Celtic Park. See, if there was 2 minutes to go yesterday at Celtic Park, and we were 2-1 down, we never get that penalty. And every Rangers fan will know what I'm talking about. So that's exactly what I'm saying. See, in the eyes of the law, I suppose, you guys will probably say it was a penalty, right? It's one of these ones that you're looking for it if it's for you and against you, and 2 minutes to go, most Rangers fans will say that's never a penalty. But I can remember Rangers getting many, many shouts at penalties when the ball's hitting the hand. I can remember 1 year ago at Celtic Park when the ball hit the hand of a Celtic player, I think it was McCoist, and the ball hit his hand. And I thought, no penalty. The rules have changed, yes. But I suppose if the ball's net bound, I'd be looking for a penalty there, right? But I'm telling you, if it was at Celtic Park with 2 minutes to go and we were looking for a draw, you're never getting that. And three penalties in the last 35 years backs that up. There's a conspiracy. So if any Celtic fans say that you got a decision, three penalties in 35 years, that just proves it. It's just a farce.
But at the same time, though, you've said it probably was a penalty yesterday. We've then referenced an incident from, I was waiting on the name, Ali McCoist, where James then says the rules have changed. There was no VAR. Like, I could never. I wouldn't even dream of changing people's perceptions that go back decades.
No,
so it's not about being selective. It's about doing what gives you the easiest night, and that's talking about was yesterday a penalty or not.
I'm not traumatised by Rangers' penalty record at Celtic Park. As traumatised as I am at James's use of the phrase "squeaky bum time," it's taking me back to that hot wings challenge that Andy and you and I doing last week.
Well, wasn't it my squeaking that I was worried about? No, seriously though, right, it's a big talking point yesterday. James actually made a couple of admissions in there that I think are important. He says if that's up the other end as a Rangers fan, you're screaming for it. again, I genuinely don't have time to go over 35 years worth of claims. I can't remember the McCoist one, maybe a bit before my time. Maybe there are others. What did you think of yesterday?
I think it's a penalty kick. I also think you do have the right to feel harsh, not on the decision, but feel harsh on Dujon Sterling, because like I says, I think it's just an act of desperation to repair a mistake for his centre-half partnerships. But the fact of the matter is, it's not too dissimilar, and I know it's not the exact same, but Tony Ralston, there's a penalty against Tony Ralston in the semi-final because it hits his arm and it's going on target. I think it's the exact same case yesterday. Yes, it's close proximity, but I even think if it doesn't hit his arm, it's probably going the back of the net. So I don't think you can have any complaints of the penalty being awarded. And I think for me, you know, I'm not a huge fan of VAR. Not so much of how it's used, just in terms of the pace of play, entertainment value. I think that's the perfect scenario of how it works, because I was at the game, 2,500 Celtic fans didn't appeal for it. Myself and the city couldn't even see anything. You just thought it was a great save for Jack Butlin. And then you see the pictures, you see the replay. And like you said, you don't think you can have any complaints. It's a penalty.
I thought John Beaton handled the game very well yesterday. And the eye test tells you, I'm with Andy, I thought it was a wonderful save by
Jack. I think we were praising him majorly in the studio.
And then you see it again. The eye test tells you that it is a handball. I need to ask you, though, as the defending team, what do you think of Rangers? Not, you know, the penalty saved. Hitati then gets a second goal. Then Hitati gets a third goal. And the closest guy to Hitati was it Maida who was chasing
him? Andy phoned, I can answer this. He phoned me earlier and says he wants the rules changed, that you're not allowed to score from rebounds after yesterday.
Where were the Rangers players?
Well, do you know what? I was surprised at Jack Butlin's reaction. I thought he would go absolutely mental at his defenders, because, like you say,
they usually do when it's one rebound.
Absolutely. That's the fifth penalty Jack Butlin's faced this season, and he saved all five.
Yeah, eight out of his last nine.
And the rebound, the save for the rebound is even better. Yeah. And the fact that Rio Hitati then manages to get a third pop at it. I mean, it's just the basics of the game. You know, you always have to anticipate that your goalkeeper can potentially save the penalty. You have to follow it in. But like you said, it was Dyson Maeda and Rio Hitati was proactive.
What is it that makes it a penalty for you? Because it is obviously close proximity, which is one of the considerations. But again, by the very nature of that word, it's subjective, because you can't. Well, there's no measurement. You don't get the tape measure out and say anything under a foot is not given anything over. The you're looking obviously for is the arm unnatural? Is it too far outstretched? What was it that made it a penalty for you against all the kind of checkpoints?
One of the checkpoints would be, I think the ball's going into the net. If it doesn't hit Dujon Sterling on that arm, I don't think Jack Butlin's getting it, because it comes up off his arm, hits Butlin in the face and goes out. I think if it doesn't hit his arm, if his arm's not there, the ball's going into the net. But I think that I know you can't jump without putting your arms out. It's not intentional, which doesn't matter anyway. It's hit his arm. It's a penalty.
Can I ask you a question? Because I actually genuinely don't know this answer. See if it hit his right arm. No, his right arm was relatively close to his body compared to his left, which it does hit. Would that still be a penalty kick? Because I still even think if it hits his right arm, it's still probably going in the net.
No, I think you've got a much better chance of that not being given. Yeah, I think it's...
Definitely.
But this is a good look. It is bore everybody the subjectivity of it, because the people who don't think that's a penalty are saying that is a natural position for jumping. But a lot of other people, and John Beaton included, think that yes, well, your arms need to come up, they don't need to go there and straight out the way Sterling's was. So
the thing is, Gordon, now this isn't in terms of the interpretation of the law, this is just my feeling as a player, that if that was stopped across that action, I would not want to see that as a penalty. It's the fact that it's going in the net that I think you can't have any complaints.
Okay, James, thank you very much. It's a good time to call. Why not get involved right now, and we'll take your thoughts, whether it is the penalty, whether it's the good first half from Rangers and bad second, or vice versa for Celtic, or your thoughts on where it leaves the title race. James wants more from you Rangers fans. He thinks you're giving up too easy. He thinks you can win that title. So get the calls into us, and we will speak to you next.
Clyde One.
Yes, it is that time of the night where I run some very important information past you, because £500,000 Peter bagged on Friday, and it's going up. How big would this be for a start to the new month with an extra £550,000 in your life? It could be you, but you need to be in the draw by texting yes to 61025. Texts are £250 plus your standard network rate. You can also enter at makemeawinner.co.uk. You'll find all the rules there for this network competition, or call 03434 269340, and the calls are all charged at a standard rate. It's over 18s only, and the lines close 5pm Friday, so text yes to 61025. Good luck.
01419511025. This is Scottish football's league leader, Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Roger Hannah and Andy Halliday are here. Keep the calls coming in. Let's get the assessments from Danny Rule first of all, the home boss yesterday.
Yeah, finally disappointed. I think we're all disappointed. We played 50 minutes, an outstanding football game from our side, I think, in all phases of the game. Much, much, much better team. Good pressing, good transition moments, good possession stuff. We dominate them. They had no chance. It was outstanding. But football is about 95 minutes, not 45 or 50 minutes. Finally, it was clear for me, yeah, after 2-0 and a half time, that they try something. We come well out after the second to the half time. I think we had straight 2-3 good moments. And then you felt the momentum changed a little bit. We lose some ball in transition moments. We didn't attack the last line what we want to continue. They were struggling with them, and then they scored a goal. And then, you know, they have nothing to lose. They can go all in. And finally, they get an, a pen for the 2-2, and then you have the result, 2-2.
David's a Rangers fan. How do you look back on it, David?
My worries are, our Rangers not have got the bottle. They don't seem to be able to hold the game for 90 minutes over the last few weeks. The first 45, they looked as if they could have put 4 or 5 past Celtic, and then the second half, it was as if they said, you know what, 2-0's fine, let's just sit and hold it at 2-0. Celtic got on a couple of reserves, a couple of substitutions, and just ripped into us, and we just didn't have any reply for it. And we just weren't good enough. And the way you've got to look at it is, Hearts are doing what Rangers and Celtic have done over the last 10, 20 years. They're grinding out results and beating the teams they're playing by one goal and getting the 3 points. And that's what Rangers and Celtic won.
Why is it definitely bottle win mentality for you, David? Why is that the kind of main thing that comes through for you?
They just seem to be... They're great for about 45, 60 minutes, and then they just kind of struggle to keep going the way they're playing. They kind of... Other teams seem to change, and we can't adapt to the way they change.
A really good word in there, control, David said. You never really see Rangers controlling a game for lengthy spells. Rangers were outstanding for 45 minutes. They were dynamic, they were flamboyant, they scored 2 good goals, they were on the front foot, they were aggressive. But then they kind of fade away and they don't control it. When you're 2-0 up, and people will say, oh, 2-0 is a dangerous lead, but when you're 2-0 up, you should be able to close a game out. You should be able to make tactical changes, and you should have confidence in yourself that you can see it out. Rangers couldn't see out 1-0 against 10 men at Fir Park. They couldn't control the game at any stage. At Livingston, the week passing Sunday, I was there for Super Scoreboard. And yes, they got back to 2-2, but, you know, there were bugles sounding. He was taking off centre halves and putting on centre forwards, and there was no control. They were just throwing everything at it. So control is a really good word, because until Rangers learn how to control a game, as Danny Rowe says, for 95 minutes, then they're not going to prosper.
You don't have to control the full thing, though, Andy, do you? Is there another world where you don't control it all, but the drop off isn't as extreme as it was yesterday? You may get away with that. You know, not apart from your own team, not often do you see full control for a lot of games, but the drop off was just too big, surely.
Yeah, it was far too big, and I think there's numerous reasons for that. I think number one, I think it's very, very difficult for the players to keep up the intensity they showed in 45 minutes for 90 minutes. But like he says, if you can't keep up that same level of intensity out of possession, you then have to have periods where you've got the ball and you can get your breather when you've got the ball. But I just don't think Rangers kept a hold of the football anywhere near enough, which is why, again, I'm going to repeat myself, but I thought the change of formation for Danny Rowe, I just didn't think worked at all. I think it then made it far too easy for Celtic to win the first balls and then land on the second balls.
Why not then? Because it seemed obvious from the outside that if you don't have that midfield control, that is obviously why you brought Diomande on. And you're right, it really didn't make any difference at all. So why
because I still thought they were as equally as direct as they were in the first half, but they didn't have the same targets right. that they had at the top end of the pitch. They didn't have the same amount of bodies to land on the second balls around the pitch. I was actually talking about this to a couple of friends after the game. Now, Danny Rule, on numerous occasions this season, when Rangers have had a one goal lead, he's brought in an extra centre half to be more secure at the ball in the box, sorry, defend cross balls, and he took a lot of criticism for doing that at Fir Park. But I feel that a lot of the criticism came for because Motherwell went down to 10 men, and Motherwell, being the type of team they are going to build through the thirds, are going to get towards your box, and they're going to almost camp you in. I wonder if he had the opportunity to do it again, he would do that yesterday. Yeah, I think if he had the opportunity again, would he have brought on a Nasser Djiga instead and been a bit more secure defensively and tried to counter-attack Celtic's attacks that way by defending their box a bit better?
When Diamandé, when you saw him stripped to come on, I thought Scove Olsen was coming off because I actually thought Nadiri and Chermiti were still occupying Celtic. I wonder if he would just have, you know, dropped Mikey Moore in a little bit, almost gone 4-3-1-2.
Yeah.
At that stage of the game, bolster the midfield a wee bit, but keep the two men up top, because I thought when Nadiri came off, Chermiti had far less of an impact in the game second half.
I thought Nadiri and Chermiti had done a fantastic job in the first half of occupying not only Celtic's back two, but stopping any supply into Callum McGregor.
Yeah.
Now, when Diamandé came on the pitch, it was clear as day that his instruction was to man-mark Callum McGregor for the last 30 minutes, so that it then left Celtic's opposite centre-half as a free player. And the amount of times when Rangers thought they had a high bit of pressure on, that Hatate, when I thought he had a huge influence in the game, he was dynamic to receive, he would receive a square ball for Scales and he would flip it to the opposite centre-half and Rangers' press was done. For me, that's why I says when you make that tactical change and change your formation, you can't press the exact same way because it's a different shape. You have to change your press, you have to change how you are on the ball. So for me, that's when the opposite wide player, so Mikey Moore should then jump on the centre-half, Roman should then jump on, and they can still keep the same framework that works so well and being aggressive at the top end of the pitch.
Then the second change, and I'm not dead against Diamandé for Nadiri, because as Gordon said, it sort of made sense if you do it properly. Throwing Gassama into that game at that stage of the game was a gamble too far for me. Mm-hmm. You talk about Djiga, I actually wonder if it was a case for James Tavernier at that stage. If you're taking Scove Olsen off, I think Tavernier would have been a better bet than Gassama.
I don't know how much I lean into the mentality side of thing. I think it's more a Rangers style where they just give up the ball too much. But I look at certain decision making in high pressure moments. Rangers win a wide free kick with 30 seconds to go, and their decision is to take it short when Celtic have their full, basically the full team in and around the edge of the box, such has been Rangers' prowess for set pieces, which we spoke about so often. I think it was certain moments like that, I thought the decision making towards the end of the game just looked a wee bit frantic, a wee bit rushed. But listen, it's all in isolation because there's different games. But Rangers have scored the most goals this season in the last 15 minutes, so they've shown that they can go towards the end of games.
David, what about the title prospects after yesterday?
I think Hearts could win it. I think, as I say, they just seem to be able to grind out results and beat the opposition by one goal.
And that's, listen, it's back to David's one, it's back to control, because we talk about Hearts 1-0 last week against Falkirk, 1-0 this week against Aberdeen. They controlled those games for long, long spells. Never, I know Stuart Armstrong went down in the box late on, but it was never really
a
time.
A penalty.
No,
I'm not convinced it was, Gordon, to be honest with you. I bet it was a few folk at Tynecastle had their hearts in their mouths.
I'd love to hear from Hearts.
Hearts controlled those two games really, really well.
Hearts fans, come on. How much did you celebrate Celtic's equaliser yesterday? That's what this season is doing to people. It's making you do strange things. So let us know. I've actually had some really quite worrying breaking news make its way to me, Andy Halliday. Do you remember about 50 minutes ago when we started the show, Roger Hannah made that really unfunny gag about us falling off our chair? Because Motherwell players apparently go down too easy. As if it wasn't bad enough the first time, do you know he said the exact same line on his Scottish Sun podcast earlier on today? It's just flashed up on my Twitter. You thought that was so funny that it was worth saying twice in one day.
I've had a very difficult day. You know, my friend,
I am astonished at
my
that.
My friend Christopher from Ayrshire was in at my work at 8:15 this morning.
I heard.
And the two of us recorded this podcast, and it suddenly came to me. I said, we need to keep an eye on your pal Andy Halliday in case he throws him off his chair. And Boydie had a wee laugh, and I thought, I know what my intro's going to be tonight.
So Boydie said, that's so funny, Roger. Make sure you say that again.
Yes.
Wow. You two have got a lot to answer for. Let's play this.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
New week, clean slate, same high standards on a Monday night on Beat the Pundit. Let's see what you're made of out there. 01419511025, and the lines close at 7.
Tackle the headlines. 01419511025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Roger Hanna and Andy Halliday are here at 01419511025. If you want to join in, loads of fallout from yesterday, a result that probably doesn't really suit MD as much as it suits Hearts. I'd like to hear from you Hearts fans. Let us know what you are thinking out there after that weekend, and we'll try our best to work through it all. Let's play this first though.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
Come on then, it is Beat the Pundit time. It is always tough on a Monday, but it doesn't really stop people taking part. They obviously fancy the scalp of Roger Hanna or Andy Halliday. Andy is on the line as well in Govan Hill. How are you, Andy?
Alright, Gordon, how are you doing?
Good, thank you. Have you ever played this before?
Oh, it's my first time.
Good, I like that. Do you tend to do okay when you play along at home, or how does it go?
I know, bad. Usually a 4 or a 5,
right.
So
that
not
seems
too
like
bad.
A solid level. Oof, to me.
It's not great for the minus winners.
That's true.
It's quick.
Speed could be important factor here. Let's toss the coin and find out. The blue side is for Andy Halliday, and the red side is for Roger Hanna. So let's see how we get on with the coin. And it is a red Roger, I'm afraid. Roger, you start on your minus one. Andy, on the line, 30 seconds. Just answer as many as you can and pass if you do not know the answer. All right?
That's it.
Come on then. 30 seconds on the clock, and your time starts now. Who was the last Celtic player to score a hat-trick against Rangers?
Shipping Belly.
Who's the last team to beat Rangers in the Scottish Premiership?
Hearts.
Who's the official kit supplier for the Scotland national team?
Davis.
Which Scottish stadium will host the Challenge Cup final this season?
Broadwood.
How many total goals has Yusuf Chirmiti scored against Celtic?
4.
Which Scottish Premiership team have now conceded the most league goals?
Livingston.
And which former Rangers player made their Livingston debut on Saturday?
Which former Rangers player?
Yes.
Scott Arfield.
Okay, let's bring back Roger Hanna. Can you hear us?
Yep.
Do me a wee favour, will we take that league table off him? Ready?
I'm always ready.
30 seconds on the clock. You start at minus one, and your time starts now. Who was the last Celtic player to score a hat-trick against Rangers?
Dembele.
Name the last team to beat Rangers in the Scottish Premiership.
Hearts.
Who's the official kit supplier for the Scotland national team?
Adidas.
Which Scottish stadium will host the Scottish Challenge Cup final this season?
Fair Hill.
How many total goals has Yusuf Chirmiti now scored against Celtic?
4.
Which Scottish Premiership team have conceded the most league goals?
Kilmarnock.
And which former Rangers player made their Livy debut at the weekend?
Barry McKay.
Okay.
He's not ass.
Andy,
ten.
What do you think?
Ten.
I think he's done me by one or two. See, as soon as I said Livingston, I knew it was Kilmarnock.
Let's find out. We'll go through them. The last Celtic player to score a hat-trick against Rangers, Moussa Dembele. You both got it. Roger stays one behind. He's on minus one. The last team to beat Rangers was Hearts in the Premiership. Same story. You both get it. You both knew Adidas. Roger is still one behind. The stadium which will host the Challenge Cup final is the Wire Stadium at Firhill, as it's now known. Firhill to you and I.
Come on,
this is a corporate world. This it's all about money, sponsorship.
I didn't even hear that.
So Roger Hanna levels, if you like, because he got that one right. Yusuf Chirmiti has scored 4-2 on Sunday, 2 on the 3rd of January, so still level. But then he flexed his muscles, showed his endurance. The Premiership team with the most league goals conceded is now Killy. They're one worse off, I'm afraid, Andy. Livy 59, as you said, Killy on 60, and Barry McKay made his Livingston debut at the weekend. Andy, you said you normally get 4 or 5, and you got 4. But unfortunately for you, Roger Hanna got more, and more than enough to handle his minus one as well. That was close, though. I liked that.
Well played, Roger.
Well played, Andy. That was good. I actually thought it was a really exciting one on Friday night with Scott Allen, wasn't it? 4-4, and went to the tiebreak.
Right, hang on the line. I do want to speak to Andy a bit more, but you are going for the 10 again. How many 10s you got this season?
I'm not sure.
How many?
I'm not sure.
Please. Which former Celtic manager appeared on the cover of video game Total Club Manager 2004?
Which former? Hold on.
It's a stupid question, really. I've just, which just, it doesn't actually, was reading former for the word above, which was the Rangers player Barry McKay. Which Celtic manager appeared on the cover of the video game?
I'm going to have to say Martin O'Neill.
Yeah, I mean, it's Martin O'Neill. Who have you written down? John Barnes.
John Barnes, aye.
So hold on, 2004, you think John Barnes' Celtic spell did enough to get him propelled onto the front cover?
I was just
of,
thinking, who was the manager in 2004 and he'd been in the European final?
So I couldn't say former there. Okay. Scotland's World Cup games against, World Cup game, sorry, against Haiti will be played in which US state?
Massachusetts.
Boring. And which X Factor runner-up?
No way.
Oh, come on now.
Appeared at Celtic Park during halftime of an Old Firm game in January 2010.
Oh. Susan Boyle.
No, yes, we've done him.
No,
we've done him.
Who was it?
It was Ollie Murs, apparently.
That's a shocking question.
It's not really football knowledge as such, is it? We needed something to do him out of the 10, though.
I know, but
that's not even down there. I just made that up. I wouldn't know. So there we go. There you are. Ollie Murs, apparently.
There you go.
I look that one up.
Every day's a school day.
Andy, who's your team?
Celtic.
Right, what are you thinking after yesterday then?
50-50, to be fair. The first half was really poor. They just battered us all over the pitch. But the second half, we came out. Konecty and Hatate changed the game, in my opinion. Hatate's just open deep, spraying passes everywhere. Just a catalyst in the comeback.
And where did that come from then? Because he has been criticised all season long, and probably quite rightly at times. Did you expect that sort of impact from him?
Not really, but to be fair, you see it in spells, like the final game, if you remember. That's like, it's a sort of joke that Celtic fans have. Once every 10 games, Hatate turns up, and it's like a 10 out of 10 performance, and he's the best player in the league. It was the same against Feyenoord. It was unbelievable that night. And he just came on yesterday, and it was a Rolls Royce in the middle of the park. It was brilliant.
Andy, it's like the temptation to be knee-jerk is irresistible here, because, you know, we'll always have fun about how we swing from one judgment to the other. But seriously, in 45 minutes, I don't think it is outrageous to have Rio Hatate go from a guy that does not deserve to be in the Celtic team to, maybe this guy can be the difference for a title charge, because you just saw the impact he made yesterday.
Yeah, I thought Martin O'Neill had some really, really big decisions to make before the game in terms of starting lineup. Who was going to play in goals, which was always a huge talking point. Who was going to lead the line for Celtic, and who was going to play at centre-half. I didn't feel at any point that Rio Hatate would start the game. And you know, I talked about Martin O'Neill by his own admission, probably admitting that he got his starting lineup wrong. For me, Celtic's best 11 going into the game at the weekend didn't involve Rio Hatate, because of what we've seen over the last 2 or 3 months. But he came on and he showed that he still can be the Rio Hatate that we've seen for the last two and a half seasons for Celtic. I think for me, it's arguably his best 45 minute performance of the season. But what I would say is, Gordon, I didn't think it was through anything unbelievable. I just thought it was really, really dynamic to try and get on the ball. I thought he made it tick for Celtic. I thought he got Celtic up the pitch. And then off the ball, I thought he landed on so many second balls that Rangers players were landing on the full first half.
And listen, it shouldn't be a surprise, because you've seen for the last 4 or 5 years the quality that Rio Hatate can bring to that Celtic midfield. But it was a surprise, because he's been out of sorts so much for such a length of this season. He's looked as if, at times, he's looked as if he was in a huff, Gordon. It looked as if, you know, his Celtic days were behind him, as if he would move on in the summer. He might still move on in the summer. But the second 45 minutes at Ibrox indicated that he can still play a big part in this run-in. And there's no questioning his quality.
Andy, do you expect him now? And again, I know we're just reacting to this 45 minutes, but does he stay in now? Does he become a kind of important part? Is that how you expect it to go?
It's difficult, to be fair, because you could turn up at Aberdeen tomorrow and it could be terrible again. So
don't really know, but I think he's got to play. I think he deserves it based off that 45 minutes.
I think the interesting thing is as well, Gordon, it's through admission of Celtic being absolutely desperate for Oxlade Chamberlain to get up to speed, because I think they've been really excited about not only the signing but what they've seen in glimpses so far. But I thought you could see, certainly at the weekend there, I just thought he didn't at any point get up to speed of the game. So you think if Rio Hatate is to come back into the side, it's probably going to be expensive, Oxlade Chamberlain.
Again, Roger, we said at the top of the show, it's the type of draw that kind of feels like a win for Celtic.
Of course, but then
a day later, you get a bit more of a, you know, I think the first Celtic caller on was just pretty annoyed at yesterday, didn't really take the joy from. What did yesterday say about the January window when Benjamin Arthur doesn't start and Dane Murray does, when Adamu does start but comes off at half time, when Thomas Chivantura doesn't get on the pitch, and when it is Rio Hatate rediscovering his form, and the game ends with Daizen Maeda leading the line. Yeah. Although it felt good at full time, was yesterday a kind of stark reminder that it's not had the impact that Celtic would have hoped?
In January, Celtic needed ready-made first team players who were better than the ones who were in the first team, and all they added was, you know, fodder to the squad. Junior Adamu isn't as good as Maeda. Oxlade-Chamberlain, in current condition, isn't as good as McGregor or Hatate or Nygren. Mvuka, remember him? Nowhere to be seen. Chivantura has shown in flashes he can be a decent player, but again, not as good as Daizen Maeda. Benjamin Arthur, clearly not as good as Dane Murray. And if it wasn't for Julian Araujo, who actually I didn't think had his best game for Celtic yesterday, if it hadn't been for him, the January window would have been a complete waste of time.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think Julian Araujo, like Roger says there, I think it's been a real upgrade in that position in the pitch for Celtic. I think Chivantura and Oxlade-Chamberlain, I think there's almost question marks around them at the moment, because I do think that Oxlade-Chamberlain is going to be a good signing for Celtic. I think Chivantura has shown in flashes they can be a capable striker for Celtic, but I think in the other cases, I thought Junior Adamu in particular, I thought was really poor yesterday, and Joel Invoca, we've not even had the chance to see him on the pitch, really.
Six loan signings, Andy. If it was the end of the season today, how many would you keep for next season? Because I'm not sure Celtic could keep any, because Alistair Johnson would back at right back.
I think they would still, given the right price, they would still probably say Julian Araujo, but I think it's a fair comment. I don't think there would be anyone else at this moment in time.
Just on the subject, we'll get back to Rangers. Where are you on Scott Olsen?
Not doing enough to justify paying, what is it, £9 million?
Reportedly
to make it permanent.
Crossed
plays a lovely little dink cross with his right foot, that obviously creates an unbelievable moment for Yusuf Chermiti with his overhead kick to put it in the back of the net. But yeah, I think he just looks a wee bit one-paced at the minute. I don't know if, no, like we said about Oxlade-Chamberlain, I don't know if he's quite up to 100% match sharpness. But to be honest with you, Gordon, I don't claim to know him completely before he signed, but I just envisaged a winger that was direct and likes to go 1v1 and has shots at goal. At this moment in time, he looks almost quite passive in possession. He doesn't really get at his fullback. I think he's more of someone that wants to come inside and play little passes, but I don't think we've seen enough to justify Rangers paying £9 million in the summer.
To answer your question quickly, he's better than Oliver Antman, but not as good as Vaslav Cherny.
Okay, very quickly, the overhead kick. Where in the conversation about all-time Old Firm goals?
It would certainly be in the top five, I would think, of the ones I can remember. I mean, it was a fantastic goal. It was a wow moment in the game. In this incredible season, it's another incredible goal. Chermiti is transformed in these games. It's incredible to think of his 9 goals. 8 have come against Celtic and Hearts. If I can repeat another line that I said in my podcast this morning, Gordon, no wonder Kevin Thirlwell gets his big jobs at the FA.
It's incredible. For you, best you've seen?
I think it's the best I've seen, yeah. And if the sorry fact for Yusuf Chermiti, it won't be remembered as much as it would have if it ended up 2-0 or 2-1. And The second goal's, I think, is excellent as well. I think he does ever so well to keep a nothing ball alive. I've seen a lot of criticism for Julian Araujo, and I don't know what else Julian Araujo can really do, because I think it's very difficult for him to go with his head, because two Romans has pressed him straight on, and Yusuf Chometi, such as the long legs he's got, by the time he touches it around Julian Araujo, it's chest height, so it's, I don't think it's low enough for him to hook it away. I think you just can't take anything away for Yusuf Chometi taking a nothing ball into a goal for Rangers.
Thank you to Andy. Martin is on the other line. What have you got for us tonight, Martin?
Hi, Gordon. Hi, Andy. Hi, Roger.
Hello. How you doing, Martin?
So, this is coming from a Celtic fan's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
The best kind of run I can remember Celtic going over in the last few years was the Anish Postecoglou kind of time. You know, we've been on that fantastic run, winning trebles and really doing well. And that came after losing the league to Rangers. My problem over the last two seasons really has been that we're just doing just enough to stay ahead of Rangers. No more. You know, that the forgoing the Champions League stuff at the start of the season proved that. So it's like, you know, I think if Celtic were to lose the league this season, and someone like Hearts were to win the league, I think it would shake up Scottish football, and I think it would put improve both halves of the old firm. I think it would force them to have to improve.
So hold on, are you going as far as saying, forgive me if I'm putting words in, right,
yeah.
Sorry, that's what I was wondering. You're a Celtic fan and you actively hope they don't win the league.
Yeah, that's very firstly, it's very painful for me to say. I want my team to do well every season. I want them to win every trophy going. I love seeing them going runs in Europe, though it's not happened for a long time. But I want the best for my club at the same time. And I believe that if we win the league this season, the board will go, well, you know, look, we proved you right, we done it, we won the league. We don't need to do anything other than what we're doing just now, because that model's working. And that's what they keep saying to the collective just now. The model's working. We're winning the titles, we're winning these trophies. You know, we're proving our point, we're doing what you're asking us to do. And they're not.
It's something,
I get the logic,
it's a good
Roger,
point
but
Martin makes. And sometimes, you know, sometimes it needs a short, sharp shock. Nobody other than Rangers or Celtic has won this league since 1985. And I'm old enough to remember when Alec Ferguson was at Aberdeen and Jim McLean was at Dundee United. And the fact that they were winning trophies and they were winning all the plaudits, Martin, you might remember yourself, that sparked Rangers into going and getting Graham Souness and spending money and bringing the Terry Butchers and the Chris Woods and all these guys up from England. Move that forward, I think 14 years, Rangers had enjoyed a huge amount of success. Celtic had tried a few things. They brought in John Barnes, who Andy mentioned earlier on the show.
He thought he was the cover of a video game.
And then Dermot Desmond thought, no, listen, I've had enough of this. And he went and got Martin O'Neill and set Celtic on an enormous run of success. So sometimes there's something happens elsewhere that forces a club's hand, if you like. And I think Hearts winning the league, odd by the way, if Rangers were to win the league, I think that would be a moment that would force the hand of the people running Celtic. Stan Petrov, really interesting interview last week, spoke about Celtic being complacent, being in a comfort zone, been far too comfortable in winning the things they've won in the last 13 or 14 years. And Stan Petrov felt that this moment was inevitable. It was going to come sooner rather than later. It was going to come. And I think if Hearts win the league, that will be a wake-up call to both Celtic and Rangers.
Do you not think it should already be a wake-up call? No, even if Celtic come back and win the league in the last game week of the season. I mean, for me, it shouldn't take Rangers or Hearts
If Celtic come back and win the league in the last week of the season and then win the Scottish Cup final the next week, I think the Celtic board will go back to the Celtic fans collective and say, see, I told you.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing I absolutely do agree with Martin on is it would be an incredible story for Scottish football if Hearts do go and do it. We still remember Tony Bloom's interview. Was it you, Gordon, at the start of the season when he talked about, you know, he envisages Hearts winning the title within a decade. Mm-hmm. People laughed at the thought of it. I mean, if they managed to do it in the first season, it would just be nothing short of incredible. And you know, your friend Christopher Ayrshire made a point that I do agree on. There's nothing to suggest that Hearts are going to stagnate or get worse. You know, we've seen what Tony Bloom's done.
How far are they going in the Champions League next season?
We've seen what Tony Bloom's done with his investment and his recruitment at Brighton and USG. So I think it's a obviously if Hearts win the league, it's an incredible story. But in general, it's such a promising future for Hearts with what they've got at their disposal.
I think what Hearts and Motherwell have done this season is one of the best things to happen to Scottish football in decades. And if one of them, and I'll throw Motherwell into the mix, if one of them were to win the league, it would be the best thing that happened to Scottish football since Alec Ferguson and Jim McLean.
Mm. I'll give you my true honest opinion on Motherwell after the last game of the season, all right? Can't say too much. You know?
Are they freeing you then?
Are you fit?
I'm actually, yeah.
No way. Back for the title running.
And I tell you what, they've missed me as well with the time.
I know.
So.
They've really, really struggled without your calming influence in the middle of that pitch.
Who do you take over from on Motherwell TV duty?
As long as I get to watch what I'm watching every week, I'm happy.
Thank you, Martin. Keep the calls coming. We will speak to you next. Number one for football in Glasgow and the West. 0141 951 1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Roger Hanna and Andy Halliday are here. 0141 951 1025. Plenty of reaction still to come from the weekend. I've got a full time teaser for you two, so let's do it.
The full-time teaser with Arcaplan Glasgow. Planning permission and building warrants drawings for home extension, conversion or renovation.
Thank you to Blair and Barhead for sending the question in. Thank you to our sponsors, Arcaplan Glasgow, as well. I love this, where just the full-time whistle goes and Blair thinks, I've got inspiration now for a full-time teaser on Clyde One Super Scoreboard. So before Yusuf Chirmiti, who were the last nine players to score an Old Firm double at Ibrox? Now, I don't want you doing that thing where you just throw, it's not really your style, to be fair. It's more, I'm talking about your colleagues here, where you just throw every name of every goal scorer at me. Let's try and be methodical. Who were the last nine players to score an Old Firm double at Ibrox before Yusuf Chirmiti?
Nacho Novo.
Yes, 2007, a 3-0 win for Rangers. Andy Halliday.
What year was that?
That was 2007.
Oh, I want to say someone much before that.
Oh, you can say that if you want, though.
I feel it's risky. It's a good bit before it. Lee Griffiths.
Nope.
Henrik Larsson.
I swore he did.
Henrik Larsson, no, surprisingly.
Oh, I thought that was... Wow. Right, okay. Wonder if that's timed out, so it's the last nine.
How far are we going back? Before I say my guess. Well, not in the 90s, are we?
Yeah.
Eric Bo Anderson.
Yes. Good one. 1997, Eric Bo Anderson.
January 2nd.
Okay. Any more for any more before we move on?
The 5-1 game, did Tony Andrew Flo score to...
Quick.
Tony Andrew Flo.
No. All right, so before Yusuf Chirmiti, who were the last nine players to score an Old Firm double at Ibrox? You've got Nacho Novo and Eric Bo Anderson. We'll get the remaining seven, hopefully, before the end. Thanks again to Blair. And if you want to hear your question used on the show, the address you need is fulltime@clyde1.com. What about Marty? Yes, we've got a Hearts fan on the line. Be honest with me, Marty. Did you celebrate Rio Hatate's goal yesterday?
Well, I think it's the first time I've ever celebrated a Celtic goal in my life.
It's been a funny season, Marty. That's what it's doing to you.
It definitely has, to be perfectly honest with you. I mean, all credit to Hearts, Motherwell as well, you know what I mean? It's probably this season's probably going to go down in Ireland like Scottish football for years to come, because next year, I think, obviously, Rangers and Celtic, they'll buy bigger games, so it's going to be even harder for like anybody else for it to come up and challenge again. But the Tony Bloom, like the Jamestown Analytics model, I think we'll maybe lose maybe a couple of players in the summer, but that model, then we get money for them, we can then basically buy more players as well. So it's been a really good season so far. It's beyond expectations, to be honest with you.
Where are you believing before yesterday, and where are you now? How confident are you this is Hearts' year?
What I will say is we're in a good position. It's on their own hands now, basically. But what I think as well, which really helped us, was like Rangers drawing against Hibs, Livingston and Motherwell.
if Burnley have not, it would be a completely different story, to be honest with you. You know?
It's in their own hands, that's for sure. What do you think about... Let's just focus a bit specifically on the weekend. We didn't really do it yet. Was that about as comfortable a 1-0 as you'll kind of get? I was at Tynecastle. It didn't ever feel like there was any real danger. I don't think Hearts were necessarily outstanding either. But
no,
you know.
But I think the same the week before as well against Falkirk. What makes these particularly noteworthy is Hearts have handled the pressure really well. You know, they've never been in this situation before. And, you know, pressure does strange things to people. And you would never have known that with Hearts. You know, the first game, there's no Shankland, there's no Devlin. I think Beringham missed the first game as well. There's no Kingsley. There's all manner of people missing the weekend. You know, you throw it, there's no Adju, the record signing as well. By the Aberdeen game, Stuart Finlay was out of the team too. So, you know, there are a lot of key experienced players missing. There's no Craig Gordon in the squad either. But they've handled it really well. And, you know, that would give you confidence going into these final games. You talk about after the split, you know, the last game before the split is Motherwell at Tynecastle. So Hearts are going to have to play their last six against their direct rivals. But there's nothing you've seen so far, even when they lost to Ibrox, nothing you've seen so far that would indicate they're struggling to cope with the pressure.
I thought, I mentioned it was 3-1-0. Victories consecutively at Tynecastle. Obviously Hibs was in the dying embers of the game, massive derby game. I thought the Falkirk game, I thought Hearts were pretty average in the first half, but then I thought they were really strong in the second half. But then yesterday, compared to the other two, I thought it was complete control for the first minute to the last. I thought they had chances to extend their lead. Kibori obviously misses that huge chance in the first half where he dinks a goal and it just trundles by the post. But then you're expecting a barrage from Aberdeen at some point, you know, in Hearts and Tynecastle to have that sense of nervousness given the stage of the season. But it never came. I thought whatever Aberdeen tried to throw at Hearts towards the end of the game, I thought they dealt with extremely well. And, you know, we've mentioned it a few times this season when it comes to Hearts. I don't see an area of weakness in Hearts' team. I think they've got goal scorers throughout. I think they're strong through the spine of their team. I think they're solid defensively. I think they're excellent for set pieces. And that's, you know, I've talked about the spine there. That's not mentioned. Harry Milne and Kiese Reidis in the flanks as well. So I think they've been really consistent throughout the full season. They've only got, what is it now, 10 games to go, 9 games to go?
I mean, Marty, if you can keep this sort of advantage on the points column and then get back Cammy Devlin and then get back Lauren Shankland, surely that belief only grows.
Well, absolutely. I mean, we've had, like, I think it's 11 first team players out, McInnes was saying, eh? So, I mean, and the boys at Spock came in, they've basically just rolled their sleeves up and got on with it and gave us a shift every game. You know, Mark Leonard's came in and he's been an absolute stooge to sign the middle of that park. He's been outstanding. Big Tom Magnusson's came in for paying 40,000 euros for Valour in Iceland. Can we really settle in? But the last few games have been absolutely outstanding as well. And there's not a player on Saturday that you could say didn't give us like 90 minutes and showed what it meant to actually play for the jersey, you know?
What did you think of Derek McInnes and Giger of Aberdeen after the game? You see the wee high-tempered scenes at the end.
Oh yeah, but I mean, I think it's in keeping with Derek's kind of MO at the minute. You know, he was waving farewell to Hibernian fans not that long ago after Magnusson scored the Derby winner late in the game. Did he not have his nose in the Celtic dugout at Mark Fotheringham as well? So,
well, it was an inexperienced coach.
Martin O'Neill identified him as Mark Fotheringham, I think.
Just checking.
And Derek apologised to him. So I think this is, you know, Derek has studied, he's played under some experienced managers, he's currently studying under the most experienced of them all in Sir Alec Ferguson, and he's maybe just feels that if he gets himself involved in some of these things, he's diverting a wee bit of the pressure away from his players. It's maybe, I personally don't think it's an accident that Derek's been involved in two or three of these things. I think it's maybe an intentional way of putting the focus on himself, and I don't mean that in a greedy way or a selfish way, just in the way of diverting the gaze away from his players and taking a wee burden, you know, another wee layer of pressure off them.
I mean, Marty, do you think it's a view shared by your fellow Hearts fans? Like I said, it was there at the weekend, and when the full time whistle goes, it just, I don't know, you feel something. It feels like that belief is sort of there. Is that fair?
I would absolutely say so. I mean, the atmosphere at Tynecastle on Saturday for 90 minutes was absolutely, it was like three derbies rolled into one. It was just like raucous. It was loud. It was, every fan was like singing, shouting. It was just absolutely, it was unbelievable. And when Derek comes on the park at the end, it's like him and Geiger, I'd have a wee thing with, but it's not just handbags in it, really. And it's like, but I think he is actually saying, well, I'm going to show the boys here that I'm up for this as well. You know, I'm not just them on the park. Me, I'm going to show what it means to me as well, and I'm going to stick up for him, stand up for him. You know what I mean? He's watched his press conferences. He speaks very, very well. You know, so it's, I think he is. I think he's maybe taking a momentum for Sir Alex as well in that context.
Because the thing, Andy, this notion about, you know, 1-0 wins and kind of whatever, just doing what they need to do to win. They've scored the most goals in the league. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's maybe been overlooked a little bit.
Yeah, exactly, and that's what I mean. They've scored the most goals. I think it's Maswanisi and Negrin that are out front. It's the two top goal scorers in the league. But after that, you followed up with Braga with 12, Shankland with 11. Mm. No, Stuart Finlay scored 6, Craig Halkett scored 5, Kizeridis has chipped in. I think they've got goals throughout the pitch. So I think Dennett McKinnon said something after the game which I thought almost went under the radar a little bit, and I thought he was bang on, that with Lauren Shankland's injury to Hearts, which was obviously going to be a massive, massive disappointment given he's their talisman, he's their captain. You know, not only did Kibori have to come and do well, but there was so much more extra onus on Claudio Braga to be that main man at the top end of the pitch. And I think you could argue he's probably been Hearts' best player over the last 6 weeks, 2 months or so. So I think he's took on that extra pressure brilliantly. And again, that goal, that looks like a really, really simple finish. I thought it was a great finish. It's great play by Kibori down the right-hand side. And a lovely little guided finish into that far corner. So we debate this every week about player of the years and the shortlist, who's going to be in the four at the end of the season. I think Braga's one that's going to be in the shortlist.
It's a bit early for us to have a proper debate in that, but I'm now getting fascinated, Roger, because the lists do come out quite early, as we know. Much harder for manager, because you don't know who's going to win what. But I want you, is it time we start dusting off the record books to see when the last year was that no Celtic or Rangers player made it into the final four?
Actually, when you were at Tynecastle on Saturday, Gordon, to get mentioned in the show, and I put forward my four as Maswanisi, Just, Braga and Halkett.
You lot are having that debate in the first weekend in March. Well, the show just goes to pot when I'm away, honestly.
As Hugh Keevan says, listen, you know, the cat's away so the mice can play.
Unbelievable. Too early.
I'm not even sure the Lord Overmaster of PFA Scotland, Sir Fraser Wishart, I'm not even sure he was aware of the last time there was no Old Firm player on the shortlist of four. It might even be the days before they had a shortlist.
Maybe.
See, if there was a shortlist of 10, I still don't think there'd be a Celtic or Rangers player on it.
Seriously?
Yeah, generally, I don't.
I think Negrin would be on it.
Negrin just for the numbers.
Honestly, still don't. I think I could still name 10 players that have had better seasons.
Go.
Well, the 10 outfielders for Motherwell, for a start. And then, listen, you just mentioned the four there. Lucas Vidinga and Kizeridis straight away are two that I think would be extremely unfortunate to leave out, but I can't really disagree with a lot of what you say. Elliot Watt, Stephen Welsh, Paul McGinn, Harry Milne. I've just mentioned six outside the four. For me, you've all had better seasons than Benjamin Negrin.
Well, hold on. Writes that down for when we've got a quiet night and we can have a proper debate on it. Thank you to Marty on the line. Can we go to the teaser quickly and then have something else exciting to tell you about before Yusuf Chirmite? Who were the last 9 players to score an Old Firm double at Ibrox? You've got Nacho Novo and Eric Bo Anderson.
Stevie Naismith.
Yes, yep. 2011-4-2.
Kamal Roof.
Yes, 4-1, 2021.
Georgios Samanas.
Yes, 2-0, Celtic 2011. Take one more guess.
I've got a couple, but I'm not confident on them. I don't want to just fling them.
I don't mind you having a bit of a guess now, because it's proving difficult, no? Quick.
Kenny Miller.
Obviously, he's on every teaser. Well done, Kenny Miller.
Right, three
to get. We'll get them in the not-too-distant future. Let me tell you about this before we move on.
The Glasgow International Comedy Festival with Clyde One.
Okay, right now on Clyde One Super Scoreboard, we are celebrating Clyde's One official partnership with the Glasgow International Comedy Festival. We're going to be doing it all week. It's running from the 11th to the 29th of March across the city, and we're giving away tickets and meals for some of the best shows out there. It's such a great night out that you have if you take all that as a package. So tonight, a pair of tickets to Tom Davis's show Spud Gun at the Old Fruit Market on Saturday the 14th. But we chuck in two pizzas, two sides, two drinks at Nonna Said just around the corner. So it's a great night out on us. All you have to do, oh my goodness, is give us the punchline to this football joke, which one of our pundits will deliver. Andy Halliday, go on, you can do it for us. Give us the punchline. No, don't you give us the punchline. You give us the joke. What's the question here?
Why can't you play football on safari?
Wow, there we go. One more time.
Why can't you play football on safari?
It's all about the delivery. Call 01419511025 right now with the punchline to that joke, and you could be off to see Tom Davis with the food thrown in as well. Over 18s only, and you have to call before the end of this break. Good luck.
The Glasgow International Comedy Festival with Clyde One.
That caught me off guard there. Didn't realise we were back with some comedy.
I was debating all the doubles at Celtic Park.
I can't hear you. And then I heard Roger Hannah mention Mars bars.
This is a slick operation.
Yeah, we're professionals anyway. Right now in Clyde One Super Scoreboard, tickets to give away for the Glasgow International Comedy Festival. The lines are now closed. Thank you for everyone who took part. I believe we're going to be doing this all week anyway. So we're giving away a pair of tickets to Tom Davis's show Spud Gun at the Old Fruit Market, Saturday 14th of March. We're chucking in two pizzas, two sides, two drinks at Nonna Said as well, so you're well looked after. All you had to do was give us the punchline to Andy Halliday's joke, and the joke was, Andy Halliday, here you go, I've got the bit of paper.
Why can't you play football on safari?
On the line we've got Tom in Cote Bridge. Tom, how are you?
I'm good, thanks.
And why can't you play football on safari?
Too many cheetahs.
Too many cheetahs.
Yes, Tom.
Oh, I was hoping we had a wee barboom shh sound effect, but there we go. Tom, you are the funniest man in Cote Bridge, and you are off to Tom Davis's show Spud Gun, and we've chucked in the pizzas and all that as well. Happy with that?
I'm delighted, thanks.
Good man. That was Tom in Cote Bridge, winner, and we do it again tomorrow. Don't forget to check out GlasgowComedyFestival.com for all the information and tickets and stuff over there as well. Loads to go and enjoy. We are trying to give you the chance to win them for free, of course, but you might want to go along and buy some tickets to the various good shows that are on. So check it out, GlasgowComedyFestival.com. You happy with that joke? Funny, yeah, hilarious.
Yeah, very good.
Okay, on that note, let's move on. 01419511025. If there's anything you think we haven't covered off from the weekend, please tell us. I'll take maybe one more guess each before Yusuf Chirmiti. Who were the last nine players to score an Old Firm double at Ibrox? Roof, Naismith, Samaras, Miller, Novo, Blanderson.
Ayo Berkovic.
Yes, a 4-2 in 1999. Great memory.
George Alberts.
Yes, a 4-0 in 2000, which means one to get. We'll get it before the end of the show. Let's bring in Dale, who's in law. How are you, Dale?
I'm not bad, not bad at all, gents. I don't want to go over the penalty that was given.
Okay.
I want to bring up the penalty that wasn't given. And to be honest, I didn't notice it at the time, although I do recall the Rangers players reacting
okay.
and asking for it to be looked at. Now, it was one of the last actions of the game. A ball comes into the box. Raskin goes for the ball, and Julian Alario barges him. The ball then goes towards the goal line, and I think Chirmiti commits a foul on the Celtic defender, and that's given. Why did VAR not look at it? I don't know if any of you have seen it on Twitter yet, but it's an obvious decision.
It would have looked at it, remember. It kind of looks at everything, really.
It didn't, know.
What do you mean?
It couldn't have. Well, if you look at it, gents, I defy any of you to come on tomorrow night having looked at it and say that it's not a penalty kick.
Okay, Andy?
I can remember it, Dave. What part of it do you think makes that a penalty?
Well, the fact is, Raskin is turned away from goal. He's about to chest it, getting his chest. Aurelio makes no attempt to play the ball and barges into the back of him.
He's not trying to chest it, he's trying to overhead kick it.
Well, the ball's coming down, and before he's actually even got it, the player's barged into him. And the penalty, anywhere else, if you think of the Mikey Moore, the challenge that Alirio had on Mikey Moore earlier on.
That was blatant game, foul, that one, though, wasn't it?
It was, but see, if you look at that barge again, go on and have a look at it, gents.
I'm actually watching it right now.
To be fair, I didn't notice it, but if you look at it, is that not worth a VAR check at the very, very least?
Dale, do you know what? See, to be honest, right, I sometimes think there's a reason you don't notice it at the time.
But the players noticed it. Well, nobody noticed the penalty. And again, if you look at the penalty by the eye, AFAB rules, it actually takes a deflection.
Yeah, but that's because you can't see the ball hitting the handle straight away. There's a difference, I think, that and sort of. Anyway, you two, what do you think of penalty?
I'll ask your opinion. Mm-hmm. Anywhere else on the pitch, is that a foul? If somebody barges into the back of you, they've made no attempt to play the ball. It's not as if he just pushes into him, he actually barges into him.
I'll go back. I'll use the phrase you used before, the eye test. I've seen it. I've seen it again. I don't think it's a penalty. There is contact. It's a contact sport. It's nothing. It's not comparable to his one in Mikey Moore.
He nearly flattens Mikey Moore.
Yeah, early in the game.
It's a blatant foul.
His teeth were rattling. I thought he was lucky not to get a yellow card, but I think that was just John Beaton's way of managing things early in the game. And as I said to you earlier, Gordon, I thought John Beaton had a good game. All these things get checked. You tell us that in the Willie Show every month. They would have had a silent look at it and just decided it's not a penalty.
Will that instant make the Willie Show?
I don't think so, to be honest.
I remember the foul on Mikey Moore when he takes it down his chest. I can't remember who has it commits the foul. No, it is Joe again. But he comes in at real pace for 10, 15 yards out. And like you said, that is a barge on his back. I think with the instance with Raskin with the overhead kick, I think, like he says, he tries to make it difficult for him. He makes a bit of contact to try and stop him for getting the overhead kick, but yeah, certainly not enough for a penalty for me.
I think and the good thing is I'm not seeing this in reaction to yesterday. I said this months ago, Roger. I think there's a new scale, which is things we never even used to talk about have now become debatable. Debatable ones have now become mistakes. Mistakes have become howlers, and howlers have become burn hand into the ground.
Not sure the fault for bringing in a howler of the week.
It feels like everything has moved up. Because, and by the way, this is to everybody. Also, various times today, been sent that clip of Sterling sort of grappling with Tonetke. They're just going to the byline, and yeah, he's got hold of his shirt.
Not a penalty.
Never a penalty in a million years. But I don't know. I feel like, is everybody getting a bit more? So, I don't know. Is it the tension rising in the?
Absolutely, it's tension rising.
Is it the level of scrutiny now? Is, you know, it's easy to clip these things up, show it, and then Dale goes, I mean, I didn't notice it, but in social media, and then you just kind of point out what everybody else has been saying about it.
Such is the tension. No, you mentioned the potential Aberdeen penalty. I'm seeing Rangers and Celtic fans saying it's a Stonewall penalty.
They want Hearts
Aberdeen against Hearts.
Andy Halliday is not convinced with you, Dale, neither is Roger Hanna, but that's what we're here for. Thank you very much to Dale in Law for that one. Very quickly, anything it'll go. I've not even given you your chance to give us your Motherwell spiel from every Monday. Come on.
A joy to watch again. It was interesting because Dundee United took a really brave approach. They went man for man, but I thought the boys' ability to still find the free player, still play into the space that Dundee United gave. I thought the first half was excellent. Then once that second goal went in for Tawanda Maswanisi, there was maybe a slight drop off in performance levels, but didn't feel at any point that the result was in doubt. Seen a stat I like today, I would like to tell you it, Gordon. Mm. The last 16 matches, Motherwell have scored 27 goals and conceded 3. So talk about hitting form at the right stage of the season. So it's a good stage of the season at that type of form.
Absolutely. Falkirk, Roger, I feel sorry for Falkirk in the sense that Hearts are doing something no one thought capable of, and Motherwell are doing something no one thought they were capable of. It shouldn't overshadow. It's just natural, though. Falkirk are incredible.
I was saying to somebody that, you know, any other season, John McGlynn would be a shoe-in for manager of the year. 2 years ago, they were still trying to get out of League One. They've done that. They've gone through the Championship, and now they're cemented in the top six. They're 12 points clear of Dundee United. They're 13 points clear of Aberdeen. Stop for a minute and consider Falkirk's wage bill and Aberdeen's wage bill and the money spent assembling the two squads. John McGlynn is a genius.
Okay, we'll leave it there. You've got one more to get on the teaser. Thanks to Blair and Barhead for sending it. Thank you very much to Arcoplan Glasgow, new sponsors as well. Before Yusuf Chirmiti, the last nine to score an Old Firm double at Ibrox: Kamar Roof, Stephen A. Smith, Georgios Samaras, Kenny Miller, Nacho Novo, George Alberts, Ayle Berkovic, Eric Bo Anderson.
I will leave it in the capable hands of my learned friend.
I was just doing a celebration there to Roger to tell me if it was right or wrong, but so it's wrong. Gabriel Amato?
Wrong.
Oh, Odson Edward?
No. It is Celtic, though.
Scott Armstrong?
No, back a bit. 2001. He did it at Celtic Park in the late 90s and then did it at Ibrox 2001. I'm going to say another name to you that you'll get it straight away.
Viduka.
Hugh Keevans.
Lubomiravchik.
Lubomir Avcic. Thank you very much to Roger and Andy. Thank you for all your calls and your company. We'll do it again tomorrow at 6. Enjoy the rest of your evening.